Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. Hey, this is Primetime Crime. I'm Katrina Daniel, your host. The tragic story of Gabby Petito is ongoing, but there is a slight piece of good news. We'll get to that in a moment. Gabby Petito's remains were found, and it was determined she had been strangled to death. The likely killer, Brian Laundrie, her boyfriend, with whom she was traveling in the Southwest. Now, if you want to know more about Gabby Petito's life and death, there's a great story in the Vanity Fair magazine by crime author Kathleen Hale. It's really eye-opening, and I strongly urge you to read it. You'll find a strong element of domestic abuse and psychological manipulation in this story, which is why my esteemed guest today, again, is Debbie Montgomery Johnson, an expert on psychological manipulation. Welcome to Primetime Crime. I'm Katrina Daniel, your host, and I'm so happy to welcome Debbie Montgomery Johnson, best-selling speaker, entrepreneur, and author of the book, The Woman Behind the Smile, Triumph Over the Ultimate Dating Betrayal. Debbie and I will be talking about Gabby Petito today with a part two episode for our Patreon subscribers later on. Hi, Debbie, and welcome. You are an expert, as far as I know, on mental manipulation. Let's talk about Gabby Petito.
What a topic. You know, and I'm really glad that you contacted me. It got me thinking about what was going on with her. And part of me just,
I know. Yeah, I agree completely. Poor girl. I feel so badly for her.
As a mother, too, I'm wondering, would I have let my daughter go on that trip? Of course, she's 19, so she could have done what she wanted to do. But there were red flags, pink flags, yellow flags, all there. And I was on my conversation with a psychotherapist this morning. It was, why do we allow our family, or why don't we say something? If we see those red flags, why are we so reticent in saying something to say, take a pause, there's no rush? I was reading about Gabby, and she was pretty much in a hurry to get on her own and get out in that van and, you know, travel with him. And
there's a really good article in Vanity Fair by crime writer Kathleen Hale. Let's rely on that a little bit. Kathleen Hale did some really serious deep diving into the background of these two young people's relationship. And she said that Gabby was just absolutely the bright shining star, and Brian Laundrie was the friendless, you know, nobody who wanted to own her. Tell me what you gleaned from that article.
Well, initially, too, I was looking at it. She was the perfect young woman. She was active in all these things, and she was the light. She was the one that was everybody wanted to be around. He was not, but they found something in common. They found a show that they liked, I think it was, that they liked to watch.
Forensic Files.
Right. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
And so that brought them together. And then I think the manipulation on his part started to take, because I know a lot of young women, and we probably were when we were kids.
Yeah.
Where you have that, I'm not good enough, I'm not pretty enough, no matter how active and bright you are, you still, part of you feels like you're not good enough. And so when someone shows attention, which he was showing to her, because they weren't in the same league. I mean, that's not nice to say, but they weren't.
No, it's true. It's true.
In two different directions, but she was getting that validation from him about, you're so pretty, you're so smart, you're all this to me. And it was all about him, but it made her feel good. And that brought them together. And no matter how much her mom or anybody would be looking at going, they're like water and vinegar, that they shouldn't be together, that drew them together. And no one could say anything because that would push them further together.
A lot of parents have that kind of scenario, and they're standing on the edge of, do I tell my daughter or son to dump this person that they're dating? They're not going to listen to me. both because they're in a rebellious state and they're really young and they want to set about their own autonomy. But I always listen to my parents. I know that sounds weird, but if my parents said, look, this person that you're dating is a creep. And my answer to my dad was, but daddy's got really nice teeth.
We want to see the best in people, and that's understandable. But it's dangerous too, in a way, because I mean, she's a young woman. She's not seeing the whole picture. She's seeing what she's feeling. And we call it in my world, that amygdala hijack, you know, that brain part is just being hijacked by the love and the, I heard the word gaslighting this morning, all that attention being poured on her. And then that becomes her reality in spite of the fact that she knows that she's not feeling good, that there's things that he's doing she doesn't feel good about. And she justifies it. I mean, in that article, it's a phenomenal article. It's like 30 pages long. Even after the 911 call, when they had seen her get slapped, she said, oh no, I did it. I did it first.
I saw that video.
And then I'm looking at the law enforcement, and I'm pretty very pro law enforcement, but the guys were justifying why she was nagging and why she was being this drippy little girl. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys, you're seeing it from his point of view, not from hers. And that was tough. And I think the part that really got to me, I was just reading it, that the shelter put him up in a hotel, not her.
Yes. Yes.
Up and put her back in the car, and it brought up that she owned the car. It was her car, but she'd never really driven it. So she was afraid of, where do I drive? She had become very dependent on him, which is part of it. He had to be the person in her life that took care of stuff. But it was all about him.
And he apparently had the presence of mind when the cops came after that report of the fight, that he was all, oh, you know, she's having problems and she's depressed, and so I'm taking care of her. And he came out in that interview with the cops and that questioning out of the roadside very calm, normal, and gentle, unthreatening.
And she came across as the weepy-eyed, red-faced, puppy-faced, emotional,
hysterical woman, which should piss us off on yet another level.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And her side of the story was, I think, dismissed as having those characteristics. And that was a shame. He played into that. He took control of that.
If you are, and I'm using Kathleen Hale's article as a basis, probably the only time he actually ever had control over anything, especially someone as special and as bright a light as she was.
Yes, that's true. Driving, I think, was probably the only control, because, you know, when she took off and on the mountains and was doing her little video things, thinking that she was going to have this great blog or vlog, that was very distressing to him, because she was doing her own thing. She wasn't spending all that time with him. Again, it's all about him. And she wanted to be an influencer. She wanted to be one of those travel people, say, look what I'm doing. And it was interesting that for so long, his friends didn't even know he was on the trip, because it was all her. He was never in the videos until towards the end.
Yeah. And she wanted to be a travel influencer. Yep. So, and he liked pretending that he was, you know, Mr. Survivalist champion, walking around everywhere barefoot, and he'd get mad at her. According to this article, she was wearing really good hiking shoes by REI. Yeah. And she got all excited because somebody asked her what her climbing shoes were, and she said REI, whatever model or brand. And REI reached out to her after they saw that, and she was hoping maybe she could get a contract and they would kick in for her travels.
She did that thinking that that would make her famous, that would make this blog, you know, important. And that really irked him, because first off, she was wearing shoes and he wanted her to, I say, suck it up, buttercup, you know, get out there and firm up your bottom of your feet. But for crying out loud, it was hot out there.
Yeah.
And even he was uncomfortable with it, but she relished the fact that she had those beautiful shoes on. And then when somebody paid attention to it, she thought that was great. He didn't like it at all.
She also, in order to earn money for this trip, she really contributed. She got a job working at Taco Bell for 50 hours a week. And he got mad at them.
He got mad because she wasn't spending that time with him. He wasn't seeing the long-term effects of, you know, being able to go on this trip. He was so consumed with having her time and her time alone that the whole money thing didn't work. Because I was wondering, how in the world are they paying for this?
Yeah.
She basically paid for it.
Yeah, she paid for everything. The van was hers. What do you think about Brian Laundrie's parents, Chris and Roberta, hiding him out for 3 weeks and refusing to talk to authorities? Do you have any opinion on that?
Oh, I do. And of course, it's my opinion. And I read what has happened because it's down here in Florida where the judge actually allowed the lawsuit to go, Petito's lawsuit against the parents. I can't imagine. I mean, yes, if your child does something and you're upset about it or just feeling guilty about what he did, I understand that you want to protect your child. However, in this case, where if they really knew that she was dead, as parents, they needed to tell her mom and dad because they were, you know, by not saying, and again, this is my opinion, by not saying something, you're either showing that you don't know or that you don't care. You don't care how they feel because you're protecting that boy to get away. You want him to get away. And I think it's so wrong. As a mom and dad, be responsible. You raise your child. Yeah, you're not responsible for everything your child does. But if you know something, it's your responsibility to tell it. And you're hurting people. You hurt her parents.
Her parents are devastated.
And the community. I mean, everybody was looking for her, wondering what had happened. And it's awful that she died, but it was worse, I think, prolonging the fact that nobody knew about it until his deathbed thing said, well, here, I did it.
His parents can't use the defense, well, we didn't know she was missing, when she's the lead story on every single news case.
And did they know she was dead? I'm pretty sure they must have.
Yeah.
If they were that close to their son, why protect him on that one? You know, he's going to get caught. Yeah. When I first read about what had happened and I was with them because so many times as the perpetrator's parent, you want to protect your child, but you also need to see that the other person's child is hurt or missing.
Yeah.
Now, if she had just run off, I could see that they wouldn't say that, but I think they must have known that she was dead.
She's the lead story, and they refused to talk to investigators, and they refused to allow him to talk to investigators, not once, but twice. And it wasn't like Gabby was a distant stranger to the Laundries. She stayed in their house and lived with them for several months. So they knew her well, almost like another daughter. So I find no excuse for the Laundries whatsoever.
I don't either.
And I have no pity for them whatsoever. Yeah. Too bad.
I mean, I've got kids who've done things and
but they didn't murder anybody. I'm thinking
they did not.
Leave her to rot in the woods or
they
desert.
Did not. And if they had, I would be the first one to turn them in.
Yep.
And that's where I think the parents, if in fact they didn't know, we don't know that for sure. I mean, if they did know, then it was their responsibility to say it, to tell it and put her parents out of their misery too, because they're keeping that hope. They're hoping someone's going to find her
for 3 weeks.
See her and
3 weeks.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, it is
actually,
very wrong.
I think the lawsuit was only for $30,000. Part of me would have said triple that, you know, 10 Great. Times that.
Well, the hunt for them was like a hunt for her body. And for him, it cost of law enforcement was like $200,000 per day.
Right.
To try to find him. So.
Exactly. It goes back to any of those stories. I forget the one, the mother who, you know, killed her little baby and then lied about it for a year. That's probably down here in Florida too. How can you do that? Just acknowledge, take responsibility and get it over with. Cause that prolonging the agony of the parents is just not fair to them. And I agree with what the judge did.
Yeah, I agree too. Let's talk about Gabby's last days. Some pieces from the article. We talked about the Taco Bell working and was he, in your opinion, how is he manipulative, do you think?
I think in every aspect of her life, from where she could sleep to what she could wear, what she could eat, what the fact that she was, when they gave her a bottle of water, she felt bad because he didn't like plastic, so she didn't want to drink it. I mean, he had totally taken over her life, and I feel bad for her. I mean, to die is not, I don't find dying a tragedy. I think it's just a release. And unfortunately, that was the way it was. She was going to get away from him, which is it's a terrible thing to say, but I'm trying to articulate my feelings about she needed to escape from him. And it's unfortunate too, that in the police encounter that they didn't see that part.
Yeah, it is.
We don't know the whole story, but in so many domestic violent cases or violence cases and abuse cases, we don't see it. And we don't act upon it until it's too late. And that's what happened here, is those just didn't get caught. And I'd be really curious to hear from the officers out there now, looking back, hindsight's 2020, yeah. How would they have done this differently? And were there really signs that she was the victim to this and not the nagging girlfriend?
Let me read his journal entry that they found after he died. He said, quote, "I am ending my life, not because of a fear of punishment, but rather because I can't stand to live another day without her. I'm sorry. I've lost our whole future together, every moment we could have shared. I'm sorry for everyone's loss. Please do not make life harder for my family. They lost a son and a daughter." Dude, you made life hard for your family, so suck it up.
Well, I do kind of agree that we don't need to burden the mom and dad or the Petito's parents anymore. The fact that he couldn't live without her anymore, well, a little late now, buddy, you did it. Yeah. I think that was the coward's way out. He didn't face what really should have been faced. And it was the easy way out for him. I'm surprised that they actually could find him, given where he went out in the
Carlton Reserve. Yeah. Considering
the alligators.
Yeah. But again, it was a very selfish act on his. He didn't have the stones to face punishment or to admit anything or to save his family the aggravation they're going through now.
Exactly.
Florida still has the death penalty, or do they?
Oh, they do. And it's being, they're looking at it with the shooter down in Parkland.
Oh, yeah, Parkland. Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
But again, you know, part of me again is like, I don't want to be paying for the bad actions of those of that guy for the rest of his life.
So yeah.
It's a long trial right now. That's still.
I'm following that too, obviously. Debbie, thank you so very much. We're going to be doing a part two with you. And those of you who are subscribing to us on Patreon will get access to that part two. I promise you it'll be as good as part one. Okay, here's my promised slightly good news. Gabby Petito's mother, Nicole Schmidt, just announced she's giving a $100,000 donation to the National Domestic Violence Hotline in honor of her daughter from the Gabby Petito Foundation. As an aside, calls to the National Domestic Violence Hotline have almost tripled. That's almost 500,000 calls, folks. Here's the number, 800-799-7233. One more time, 800-799-7233. Keep the number. Don't lose it. Use it if you need to. Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.